Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I just try to make sure that we're supporting Drake and supporting the football team. And again, this is a highly competitive, confident receiver that's produced throughout his career. Play style, got a play strength to him that you see that he can play physical, route craft, good at the catch point, has been good in the red zone. There's a play style to him that I've always appreciated and that we want to continue to enhance and make sure that, you know, he's doing things to help us. But it's just his conversation, his demeanor, his attitude, and his presence have been great through our conversations, and hopefully we can continue to add good players.
That is Patriots head coach Mike Vrabel on Stephon Diggs, who we will get to here as we bring in Ben Volin on the Wester Hotline. Good morning, it's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy is off today. Sal Capaccio is along for the ride. Sal's off to Florida for the league owners meetings this weekend.
Am I going
to
see you there, Ben? You going to be there, buddy?
Absolutely, man. You will hopefully see me poolside with a fruity beverage in hand, pretending to work hard.
So no doubt. I want everybody to know that I did make a decision in the break. Here is the deal, Ben. We asked. We have three boxes of cereal sitting on in our bistro. We have Cheerios, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and Lucky Charms. I asked the chat, or what we call our bullpen, to rank them, and we get a lot of all different responses. I want everybody to know I chose Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Here's one. Chat, you see it? I got it.
Wow,
I'm gonna eat it right here.
Those have been on the table since like Tuesday.
But they've been in the box. It's cereal.
Is the box closed?
The boxes are all
okay,
closed.
All right,
did I make the right
responsible
choice?
Responsible people working here. Close
Cheerios,
the cereal.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and Lucky Charms. I chose Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Are we talking regular Cheerios or one of the specialty kinds?
Regular, I think.
Okay, not even Honey Nut Cheerios?
I don't think so, no.
Because, right. I mean, I do like regular Cheerios. I would probably pick Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
There you go, buddy.
Lucky Charms, to me, is one of the more overrated cereals. The marshmallow to regular piece ratio is all off. It should have way more marshmallows and way fewer of the regular pieces.
Yeah.
So to me, Lucky Charms has been always kind of a little overrated.
You can buy, although this is too much to me, you can buy, I think, or at least there was a point where you could, like a limited edition where it was just the marshmallows.
Oh.
Which at that point, you're just buying a bag of marshmallows.
Eat a bowl of cereal and then go straight to the dentist. Like, do not
right.
go.
Right. It's not right. I don't even know if it's cereal at that point. It's just you just put a bowl of marshmallows in with some milk and eat that. So, anyways, a lot to get to on New England and the owners' meetings. Ben Volin of the Boston Globe now joining us on the Wester Hotline at Ben Volin. You want to follow him on Twitter, check out his stuff there. So, let's start with Diggs, Ben, and what New England wants from him. Your reaction to the contract? I mean, this happens with, you know, every player in the league, get the sticker shock of the big number, the way that the media and the agents put it out, you know, that it's what it's worth up to, then the guaranteed money comes out. So what's your opinion on what they actually invested in Diggs and what they want from him as a role?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the full details yet, so all I know are, kind of the agent-produced numbers, which is 3 for 69 with $26 million guaranteed. Haven't seen the structure of it, but I like that they signed him to a 3-year deal. It takes a little bit of the pressure off this year. It's still probably going to be a prove-it year for Stephon Diggs coming off the ACL, and he'll probably have a little bit of money guaranteed in year two, but it still will kind of be a prove-it year. But I like that they signed him to a 3-year contract, give him a little runway to develop a rapport with Drake May, takes a little bit of the pressure off Diggs to be ready to go, you know, for week one. Like, you know, maybe they can move him, bring him along a little bit more slowly as he comes back from that ACL. Ultimately, to me, the price doesn't matter. Like, they got the player, and that's what's most important for the Patriots. I viewed Diggs and Brandon Ayuk were the two most realistic targets for the Patriots this year as far as acquiring a top-end receiver or someone who could be. They badly need that. They have the worst receiver room in the NFL, you know, a bunch of number three and number four receivers, and it's been that way for several years now. They haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver since Julian Edelman in 2019. So they need talent. To me, they should still try to get Travis Hunter at number four. That would be a slam dunk for them. You could have Travis Hunter and Stephon Diggs as your top two wide receivers. So they needed to get Drake May some help, and they did it. They obviously had to overpay for Diggs, given that no one wants to come to New England. And, you know, it's still a place where they have to overpay and pay kind of a loser's tax to get people to come here. But I think most importantly, they got the player. They had the money to spend. They didn't spend any money last year, so it's good to see them spending in free agency this year. And, you know, the two big holes on the team were left tackle and wide receiver. They still need a left tackle. But I think Diggs, even at 31, even coming off an ACL, is going to be the best receiver they have there. And so I like the move for the Patriots. I think it was a no-brainer for them.
It's the second former Bills wide receiver they signed. The first was Mac Hollins, a fan favorite here in Buffalo, no doubt. He put together a nice AFC championship game. He actually led the team in touchdown receptions, maybe played a little bit more at the receiver spot than people anticipated. What about his role in New England? I did notice that he had his best season with Josh McDaniels in Vegas. How much did that play into the Patriots signing him?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part that there is a familiarity there with Mac Hollins, and they know exactly what type of player they're getting. And he's a guy who is going to obviously do a lot of work on special teams, but I expect him to be part of the offense, maybe the number three or number four receiver, similar to what he was in Buffalo and his last few stops, Miami and Las Vegas. You know, Mac Hollins isn't going to be a 1,000-yard receiver, but he's a 6'4" guy, a red zone target. He's been in the league. He's had good, solid production. So I think the Patriots, you know, clearly the contract they gave him, they wanted Mac Hollins, and they know him well, and he's going to fit in the culture that Mike Vrabel is trying to establish here. So, you know, Mac Hollins, you know, initially he was the only receiver they signed, the Patriots. And so it wasn't exactly something to get too excited about, but now that they've added Stephon Diggs too, it's like, okay, and they got Mac Hollins as well, and they're bringing back DeMario Douglas, their slot receiver, and Kayshon Boutte, you know, kind of had a nice year as a deep threat. So now their receiver room is rounding into form a little bit more, and if they can add a Travis Hunter to it, I think all of a sudden the Patriots are going to have a decent set of weapons for Drake May on offense.
Ben Volen with us. By the way, has Hollins given you a taste of his crazy personality yet in any way? He's done, I'm sure, a press conference by this point.
I believe he did a press conference, and he did walk in barefoot.
Of course.
He wasn't wearing the Fred Flintstone costume or anything like that. But, yeah, everyone's well aware of him. I'm kind of pumped because I discovered he went to my rival high school. We're both Ooh. From the DMV area outside of D.C., and
okay.
He went to Wooten, and I went to Churchill, so I'm going to have to give him some talk some smack to him for that.
You just don't ask him to say where he went to college. So, funny story, true story, I have to go around to the Bills players to get the lineup, them saying name, position, and school for radio, for the starting lineups, right? So, like you see on TV. And Mac Hollins went to North Carolina. And I said, hey, I need you to, can you say Mac Hollins, wide receiver, North Carolina? And he wouldn't say North Carolina. And I said, well, you know, you could say, why won't you say North Carolina? And the reasoning was, apparently, like, they didn't give him a scholarship. So he's like, hey, when they, because I gave them so much money, you know, they, I don't need to recognize them. I don't think he hated on them any necessarily, the school, but he wouldn't
shunned
do it.
Them.
It was,
he shunned them
for that, Ben.
Yeah.
That's interesting because my coworker, Chris Price, just wrote a profile of Mac Hollins in yesterday or today's paper. And it said he went to UNC as a walk-on, but then it said they gave him a scholarship after a year. So,
all right. Okay.
Maybe he still holds some lingering bitterness there, or maybe he didn't get the full scholarship. Yeah. I don't know, but that is an interesting point to keep in mind.
Yeah. So you've mentioned this a couple times about Hunter and him being a receiver. I've said this too, that just not even talking to you or anyone from the Patriots media, that just you look at the rosters and what the needs are. If Travis Hunter goes 4 to New England, like that's to me where he would play the most receiver, most obviously. And if he were to be the pick, Ben, like isn't this whole offseason just the linemen they've signed? They signed Bradbury, right? They've added a couple pieces up there. Drake May showed some really nice things in year one. I really liked what he showed as a rookie. He was under pressure a lot. And how do you feel that they are doing right now when it comes to surrounding him with enough to take the next step? And would Hunter just kind of be the cherry on top for that? Would he be kind of a critical piece of that, like number one receiver right away level of player? How do you see like the whole big picture when with May standing at the center of it?
Yeah, I think it's probably not fair to Travis Hunter to expect him to come in and already be like a dominant number one receiver. It's interesting. I was talking to Mike Tannenbaum the other day, the former Jets and Dolphins GM, and he thinks Travis Hunter should be a cornerback who plays like 15 snaps a game on offense. And to me, if that's how you analyze him, if that's how you evaluate him, I don't know if I would take him at number 4, because to me, the Patriots don't need – like a cornerback in today's NFL actually is not nearly as important as a wide receiver. Right. I mean, the idea of – it's hard. It's really, really hard to be a shutdown corner in today's NFL with, you know, the NFL trending towards a quick passing offense and shorter, safer passes. It's really hard for corners to shut down. And you see that in the salary structure now. There's way more guys making $20 million on offense than there are guys at cornerback. It's trending less to being a real premium position. So if you don't have Travis Hunter evaluated as a full-time wide receiver, I don't know if you would take him at number 4. Personally, I would, because I just think wide receiver is, like I said, is a more important position right now than corner. And the thing holding the Patriots back is just a total, you know, lack of playmakers on offense. They've been 31st and 30th in scoring the last 2 years, and just no one who can beat one-on-one coverage. So maybe if he comes in and is a receiver, you know, Diggs in theory would be the number one, but maybe with his ACL, you know, coming back from that, maybe he's a little slow to return. But Travis Hunter, I mean, I would play him at wide receiver, and to me that would be a home run for the Patriots just because of how bad their offense has been, and particularly at wide receiver, and they haven't been able to get anyone. I mean, they tried to trade for Brandon Ayuk last year, and they offered him a massive contract, and Ayuk said, no thanks, I don't want to go there. And Calvin Ridley turned down their money, and, you know, several
Godwin this year too, right?
Chris Godwin. Apparently the Patriots are writing him blank checks, and they couldn't get him to come. And I think what you're seeing in the NFL is if you want an elite talent, you have to draft him. Very rarely do these guys change teams and get away. You've got to draft the elite talent. So getting Travis Hunter would be a big win for the Patriots, because otherwise they are having trouble getting guys to come to New England. They have to way overpay them like they do for Stephon Diggs. Diggs was kind of the key piece to me. I liked what the Patriots had done in free agency. They really beefed up the defense. They got Milton Williams from the Eagles. They got cornerback Carlton Davis from the Lions. Robert Spillane, a linebacker from the Raiders. All nice moves, but it was incomplete until they really fixed the offense. Now, Stephon Diggs, I think, will go a nice ways to doing that. They still need to find a left tackle, but with all the money they've spent, close to $200 in guaranteed money this year, to me, the linchpin is really Stephon Diggs, because they have to improve the offense and get Drake May some weapons.
Is there anybody who's left that hurts this team in some capacity, whether it's Godshaw, Jonathan Jones, Dietrich Wise, anybody? They brought in a lot of guys. Anybody that's left that you say, you know what, that would have been a guy that we've been nice to hold on to?
Probably not too many. That was the problem with the Patriots roster last year. It was a bunch of who are these guys, you know? And like Devon Godshaw is still a good player, you know, a run-stuffing defensive tackle, but I think they got rid of him because of a scheme change. I think they're trying to go lighter and quicker at defense, similar to what Vrabel did in Tennessee. And like they view Milton Williams as their version of Jeffrey Simmons. So like Devon Godshaw doesn't fit in like that. I guess David Andrews, the center, I'm a little surprised given how much of a leader he is in the locker room. He knows, obviously, Josh McDaniel's offense very well. You know, David Andrews is a guy that everyone really leaned on last year, including Drake May, even after Andrews got hurt. So I was a little surprised they kind of unceremoniously cut David Andrews. But, you know, he is a 10-year veteran coming off a shoulder injury. He's always been undersized, which is why he went undrafted in the first place. You know, the Patriots failed him on his physical, so obviously they don't know, you know, injury-wise how good he's going to be this year. So I guess I was a little surprised that they, you know, cut a team leader like that. But, you know, football-wise, I do think that one made sense too.
What last one on New England. I'm going to get to some of the, quickly on some of the league owners meeting stuff with you. You're going down there. Some of the over-under win totals came out this week. In New England, I saw, at least at ESPN, was, I think, 7.5. What, like, expectations for them this year, is that about what expectations are, which is step up, maybe competing for a playoff spot, even squeaking in? Is that realistic to you, the idea that they could turn it around that quickly, go from bottom of the league to maybe competing for a playoff spot to the end of the year?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I don't think they're going to threaten the Bills for the division title yet or be a real AFC contender, but there's absolutely no reason why the Patriots can't be a playoff team this year. Three teams this past year went from last place to the playoffs, most notably the Commanders, and they didn't have a tremendous roster. They got Jaden Daniels, and he was a big difference in the new culture there with Dan Quinn. So there's no reason you can't have a similar kind of breakout with Mike Vrabel now, with Drake May in year two. They're not spending $200 million guaranteed to, you know, go 7-10, to be honest. I think that would be kind of a disappointment. The last time they did this was 2021. They spent a ton of money in free agency, brought in guys like Hunter Henry, Matthew Judon, Kendrick Bourne, and that was Mac Jones' rookie year. And they went from missing the playoffs the previous year under Cam Newton to 10-7 with Mac Jones. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason why the Patriots can't go 9-8, 10-7, make the playoffs. It's probably best case scenario, but they have a lot more talent now. They spent all this money. They've got, I think, a much better coach. And look, they went 4-13 last year, and it was pathetic. They had the worst roster, the worst offensive talent, the worst offensive line, a coach in Gerard Mayo who, with all due respect, didn't really know what he was doing, and newcomers all across the board on the coaching staff. And they still won 4 games and could have easily won 7, you know, with a little better coaching and a couple bounces. So I definitely see the Patriots bouncing back, being more competitive, remaining alive for the playoffs through week 18. And, you know, we'll see if they can sneak into a wild card spot.
So you're going down to the league owners meetings with Salas too. The thing that Diana Rossini was tweeting about today that I'm interested in, because kickoff stuff, unless you disagree with this, I don't know, the kickoff stuff feels like that probably passes where the touchback goes to the 35-yard line. I have not been thinking throughout this week and before that the tush push would get banned. But then I saw this tweet from Diana Rossini this morning about that there's growing appeal maybe to ban it. How does that look to you in your eyes? Before, you're not there yet, but the idea that they would ban it and whether or not they should ban it.
Well, so that I saw that tweet from Diana too this morning, and I'm curious because, you know, it doesn't matter what GMs and team presidents and agents and players say. It comes down to what the 32 owners have to say. And so I'd be curious, is she talking to owners or people underneath the owners? Because what the people underneath the owners say doesn't really matter. And, you know, generally speaking, the owners will follow the recommendations of the competition committee. And the competition committee doesn't seem like they want to ban the tush push, mostly because it's barely used in the game. I saw some stats that the tush push was used on 0.2% of plays in the NFL season, and only two teams even called it more than 5 times, the Eagles and the Bills. And the Bills weren't even good at it. They got stuffed over and over in the playoffs. So you really would just be penalizing the Eagles here. And I think the competition committee is wary about, you know, establishing new rules that really only affect one team. That said, I always go back to, I think it was the 2018 season where there was it was after Sean Payton and the Saints got jobbed in the playoffs with a missed pass interference, and they were talking about, do we want to make pass interference reviewable by instant replay? And all spring the competition was like, we are not for this. This is bad. We've never been and then the owners went and passed it anyway.
Right.
So, you know, and they passed it for 1 year, and it was a disaster, and they got rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe there are a bunch, 24 teams that think the tush push is just ugly and not real football. But frankly, I'd be surprised if they ultimately voted that way. Just based on what the competition committee is saying, and I agree with that line of thinking. Like, why are we going to, just because it looked ugly and just because the Eagles are good at it because they have Jalen Hurts who can squat 600 pounds, why should we ban a play? Maybe come up with a way to stop it. And it's not like it's taken over the league or anything. It's just one team that does it well. So I personally would be surprised if they banned it. I would not be for it. My vote doesn't matter, of course. But all that really matters is whether 24 owners agree. And, usually, like, they have these presentations. The competition committee will go over the pluses and minuses of a rule and kind of recommend what the owners should do. And usually they listen to them, but not always. So to me, it's still kind of up in the air.
Hey, real quick, what is going on with Joe Milton? He plays one game against the Bills, looks great. I mean, I'm on the sidelines watching this guy. I'm like, holy cow, I mean, he's got some skill. Now, I get it was against the Bills, primarily backup defense. But, you know, now all of a sudden they signed Josh Dobbs, and it looks like they're looking to deal this guy. What's going on with him?
Yeah, I definitely think they signed Josh Dobbs kind of as insurance, to trade Joe Milton. And I don't think they're not going to just give Joe Milton away. Mm-hmm. I think they really want to cash in on that investment. He did fall to the sixth round.
Yeah.
So, like, teams passed on him time and again last year, knowing that he's a physical freak at 6'5" and can throw the ball 90 yards and do standing backflips. So they still let him fall to the sixth round. But then once you see him on the field and see what he can do, it's like, man, I mean, there's always a coach out there who's like, oh, I can harness him and I can make him a superstar. And, I mean, his arm talent is just insane. I mean, the way he throws and just whips the ball into these tight windows is very impressive. So I definitely think the Patriots are looking to trade him. If they can get a third-round pick before the draft, I think you jump at the opportunity to cash in. A sixth-rounder for a third-rounder in just 1 year would be a good return on investment. I think they are looking to move him just to give Drake May a little bit of breathing room. I mean, you're trying to establish your young quarterback. The last thing you want is this uber-talented other young quarterback just kind of sitting there. And every time Drake makes a mistake, it's like, what can Joe Milton do?
Right.
So I do think they are kind of motivated to trade him. The Giants looked like a decent spot. The Cowboys, I was told, look out for maybe the Dallas Cowboys getting a better upgrade to Dak Prescott. The Steelers still might make some sense. I think they're, and he's locked in for 3 years on a minimum salary contract. So the guy is a total lottery pick. It's like, for a third round pick, why not? You pay him nothing. You can cut him if you need to, if it doesn't work out. And his talent is just, the potential is off the charts. So I definitely see a Joe Milton trade coming. If the Patriots can get a third round pick, great. And if not, you give him the preseason to kind of showcase himself.
Ben Volin, the Boston Globe, at Ben Volin on Twitter. Great stuff as always. I don't know if you're coming up to St. John Fisher this year, but if you are, we'll have to get another golf round in.
Well, now I might have to make the trip just based on that invitation alone. So thank you.
Love the roster.
I'll see you Sunday, Monday, and into next week in some nice 85-degree weather poolside.
You guys.
Can't wait, Sal. Can't wait.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Ben Volin, Wester Hotline. Yeah, St. John Fisher, another they're doing what? Are they just going year by year here?
Yeah, it's year by year, but I mean,
because I saw like 1 year, I guess I didn't even realize that it was up, but it's kind of up every year,
it's
right?
It's renewable, and we'll see, especially this year and next year. I mean, I don't think it's set right now, but I'd be surprised if they're not there again next year based on the new stadium still opening and the construction going on and things like that.
Right. Big news for my golf summer.
Yes,
for sure.
100%.
Love Rochester golf. When we come back, we'll get Pat Malacaro coming up at 8:45. Reset our draft conversation a little bit. I want to get your opinion on Diggs in New England and the role he'll have. I don't think he'll be number one receiver production numbers there. I think
it's
he'll
really
help.
Really interesting what Ben said about all that.
Yeah.
Right?
Let's get to that quickly when we come back, and then we'll get to Pat coming up at 8:45 as the Bisons open up today at 2 o'clock. Stay tuned. This is WGR.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hawkins with it and Wagner defending. And now it's Darian Williams.
And this is who you want.
Knox will pick him up. Williams corkscrews up, off, and down! It's a two-point lead. Final seconds. Wagner with it. Driving on Hawkins. Firing off. Texas Tech has won!
The great Kevin Harlan on the call. Texas Tech wins in overtime over Arkansas. John Calipari is out. That was the biggest seed left. 10-seed Arkansas. So I got a lot of lower seeds remaining. Tournament continues tonight. Morning, it's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy off today. Sal Capaccio is in a couple days before he heads down to the league owners meetings. Coach Cal out. You hate Coach Cal?
I used to. Villain? I used to. I don't anymore.
Patino. Patino is my villain.
Nah, I've always liked Patino, but Cal I never really liked, but he's grown on me the last several years, and this year especially, because I've always just believed it's all about recruiting, and he was, you know, cutting corners and however that worked, you know, paying guys or whatever. But sure. He did a really good job with that team this year. He did.
Yeah.
And I respect what he's done.
Yeah.
So I like that. But I never was a Calipari fan. I've always, you know, liked Patino.
So Texas Tech is through.
Yeah.
With all the 4-1 seeds still remaining.
So we had Ben Volen on a minute ago.
Yeah.
I asked him about Joe Milton. He mentioned the Dallas Cowboys, which made me remember a guy that you have loved so much. What has happened to Trey Lance? He is just gone. He's out of the league. He actually has now a CFL team.
I think that
is possibly signing him. I have to go back and see how that works, but he's
like on their negotiating list, they called it.
Yes.
Right?
But he's not, like, nobody in the NFL wants him, it seems like.
Probably. I think that's probably right. There is a chance, though, to me, that there is a team that wants to take a flyer on him as a backup, and Lance is just thinking, I got to get somewhere where I could play. The thing that I've always said about Lance, I don't know if he's any good. He's thrown 400 passes in his life, like including high school and college. He played one season of college. He just needs to play. The guy has, I don't know, like a lot of it's probably his own doing. Is the path he took to the NFL. Trey Lance was a big guy, right? Pretty strong arm, like raw skills. And he's 24 years old, and he's thrown a football less than Josh Allen did in one season for his life. How are you supposed to develop when you never play competitive football? But part of that is probably his own doing. Like, you know, he left school early.
You remember the Bills?
That was his. He probably got told, well, you could go really high in the draft if you leave school early. But the consequence is now you're 24 years old and you've basically played no football for the last 6 years.
I believe. Well, first of all, do you remember the Bills were reportedly they had made an offer for Lance?
Yeah.
And they wound
Matt
up being,
Maiocco from San Francisco, I think, reported that.
I truly believe that the game Josh Allen had in San Francisco played a role. He was in Arizona when they beat San Francisco, played a role in the Niners trading up to draft Lance, because I think they saw firsthand what a freak like that can do.
I think Shanahan's even admitted it.
And said, get me that guy.
Yeah.
Get me that guy. And he just wasn't ready, and it hasn't worked out. Do you know what they traded to get Trey Lance?
Oh, man. It was.
They're so lucky they got Brock Purdy. And I'm not telling you he's great, but he's good enough. That's for darn sure.
Was it three firsts?
They traded. They swapped from 3 to 12.
Yep.
Right? So they move down from, they move up from 12 to 3.
Yeah.
Miami goes down to 12. They also get the next two first round picks and a third.
Wow. Because I think I've seen the trade chart at the end of the day. Like, Miami got Tyreek Hill from that trade. However, it worked out. The picks Miami got, somehow they used them to get Tyreek Hill, I believe. Or no, am I thinking of the Tunsil trade?
The Tunsil trade was...
I'm thinking of the Tunsil trade, maybe. Whatever, whoever traded with San Francisco for Trey Lance got like a million amazing things.
Well, that was Miami.
No, it was Miami.
Miami had traded with Houston that acquired one of the picks that they used in this trade. That was the Laramie Tunsil deal.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I thought you were going to go with maybe Milton for the Bills as a backup because they liked Lance a couple years ago. But
maybe.
I don't think that's in division, though.
But it just seems like the Bills want to operate with, give me somebody who, if Josh Allen was to miss a few games, can at least steady the ship.
Right.
They don't need somebody with, you know,
a potential
high variance or something like that. But I do think the Bills are in a position now where at some point they should probably want to at least bring a younger quarterback into the fold.
Yep.
Maybe they feel that Shane Buechele, by the way, who they did resign to a futures contract and will compete.
Right. We'll take a break a little bit early here. We got Pat Malacaro coming up next, voice of the Buffalo Bisons. They open today at 2 o'clock. We'll talk about the Bison season coming up next. Jody Biasi, Sal Capaccio here on WGR. All right, it's opening day for the Buffalo Bisons just after 2 o'clock for first pitch today against Rochester. Pat Malacaro now joining us from the ballpark. Voice of the Buffalo Bisons. Morning, Pat.
Joe, great to chat with you. It's always fun after all the plans that we go through every season to get ready for today that it's finally here. I love opening at home instead of being on the road.
Mm-hmm.
205 can't come soon enough.
205 today, so you'll be on the Bet 1520 starting at 105 today for some pregame coverage of the season. And let's get into, you know, what I saw, by the way, the GM said today about, or was it yesterday, about the 50-degree guarantee. If it's under 50 degrees, then there's a guarantee with your ticket.
Yeah, if the temperature at game time, and we're going to rely on Buster for this one, so I know he wants to please the fans. If it does not get to 50 degrees at first pitch, fans will get a game ticket to come back in April again. So even if the Bisons win today and the temperature doesn't get to 50, it's a double win for the fans today. And, you know, looks like hopefully the rain is going to hold out. Every forecast that we've seen and heard today is that we'll definitely get through pregame, start of the game, should be good throughout the course of the game. So still plenty of time to get down here and hopefully enjoy a dry day at Salem Field.
I just said to Joe a little while ago, I don't think I've ever seen thousands of people cheering for exactly 49 degrees in my life. But that's what's going to happen today, just so you know. They want it as warm as possible, but give me that free ticket.
It's always funny because the third base side is the sun side of the ballpark. Mm. So, you know, when you get to later in the day, you see everybody migrate from the first base to the third base side, because we all know when it's cold out, you just feel 5-10 degrees warmer in the sun, and when you're in the shadows, it's 5 or 10 degrees colder. So everybody kind of heads over to third base no matter what the temperature is.
All right, so today against Rochester, let's start with some of what you expect in the ballpark if you're coming down today or for games coming up. The food offerings this year, that's always my first question. What are we looking at for some ballpark food?
Yeah, you can. It's Salem Field, right? So you can get the same great staples of a Salem's hot dog here at the ballpark to go along with your beverage of choice. Our friends at Salem's, we know they're more than just a hot dog company, and they put out some great products. A buffalo wing dip this year is going to be one of those new items that'll be served here at the ballpark. You can get it some of the concession stands. The Consumers Pub of the Park restaurant has a good buffet. So, something we bring back, we're happy to bring back this year. It's not a food item, but everywhere I go, fans have ice cream and Dippin' Dots in those mini helmets We didn't have them for so many years. That's one of those things that'll be back for fans to enjoy on select dates this year, of that souvenir you can take home from the game and kind of display it if you want at home.
There's a new sound system in the ballpark too?
There is, and you think about this ballpark opened in 1988, and a lot of things are original to the ballpark, including the sound system. The speakers themselves are the same. They've been in the ballpark for several years, but it's everything behind the scenes, all the wiring that's been beaten down by 35-plus years of Buffalo winners. All that stuff needed to be replaced, and let's be honest, you guys know it too. Technology has changed so much. We can broadcast from our cell phones now, so... The technology has changed. We have 7 or 8 rack units. They're about 6 feet tall, 7 feet tall, and they held old school amplifiers in them. Those have all been replaced. New wiring. Everything has been whittled down to one single rack unit where everything goes in and out of. It's digital. Our friends at Capstream, who are from Olean, so that's another great part of this story, is it's a local company who came in, rebuilt our sound system from the ground up, essentially, for us. And they can, at any time, just go in. If something doesn't sound right to us, they can go in, adjust a couple of things, tweak it here and there. And that's another part of this as well, is, you know, we all always listen to fan feedback, whether it be game times, the sound system, the concession items, whatever. This is one of the most talked about items on the ballpark to-do list, and finally, we're glad to finally have that checked off the box.
You have opening day today, and of course, a lot of other great theme nights, theme days, lots of promotions going on. They do a great job over there at the Buffalo Bisons, including, by the way, the Micah Hyde charity softball game in itself on May 4th, and then Kids Day, and of course, Star Wars night as well. What can you tell us about some of the new theme nights and the ones that are returning, Pat?
Yeah, this year for Star Wars Night, it's Ahsoka is the theme of the jersey. Our general manager, Anthony Sprague, has been trying to get this jersey approved by Lucasfilms for several years. And that's one thing I think fans should know is every team does a Star Wars Night, but not every team is able to send a script to Lucasfilms to be approved. And those in-between inning vignettes that eventually result in an on-field fight scene at the end of the show before fireworks, that's something unique to us. Well, we've had such great success with dates like Star Wars Night or even Superhero Night in the past. We're adding to it this year. Harry Potter Night in August is going to be, I think, one of our biggest nights of the year. There's a scarf giveaway. We have one sample of it in the ballpark. It's a really good quality scarf. It's got all the four colors of the different houses from Harry Potter on it as well. So fans are going to want to come and get that at the ballpark this year. And my personal favorite is Reverse Retro Throwback Thursdays for fans of the Sliding Buster logo. I know that's one thing on social media people ask all the time, when is it coming back? And we're throwing it back to 1998 with the modern twist on it, where it's the Sliding Buster jersey, and it'll be sleeveless. I know that was the look in 98 and 99. That was the theme of the futuristic look of sleeveless jerseys. The Bisons will wear sleeveless jerseys with the Sliding Buster and the cap as well every Thursday starting April the 10th. I can't wait because I've helped plan a lot of those fun things of that day out. I can't wait for that to first get here in April.
The reverse retro jerseys, the reverse is that the colors, though, will be the current color scheme, right?
Yeah, and red, white, and blue color scheme as opposed to the green, black, and red color scheme of the 98. And that's the other unique part of this is we all know that Soaring Buster, that Soaring Bee logo from the championship year in 2004, but the Sliding Buster with the Soaring Bee on the cap of these reverse retros is paying tribute to that 1998 season where they only wore that look 1 year, and then it kind of got scrapped, and we really don't like the look of this. Let's change it to just the Soaring Bee. So we're not just throwing it back, but trying to pay tribute to what was a championship year here in 1998.
Yeah, those will be worn, I see, on April 10th against Durham. They'll be wearing those, and then other nights throughout the year. So what about the team itself? Players to be excited about, maybe guys that are highly thought of in the Blue Jays organization. What are a couple of players that you've got your eye on this year?
Yeah, there are two players in the top 10 in the MLB Pipeline top prospect pool for the Blue Jays. Relvis Martinez was here for the majority of last season, get suspended for 80 games last year, but came back at the end of the year and is back as the number 3 prospect in the Blue Jay organization this year. Did get to the big leagues for a game as well. Excited to see him in a Bison uniform again this year. And Jake Bloss was acquired from the Astros as part of the Yusei Kikuchi trade. It was Bloss, Joey Loperfido, who's here in Buffalo, and Will Wagner, the son of Billy Wagner, all three acquired in a trade. Bloss is the number 6 prospect on MLB Pipeline's list. And he's a guy that can throw 6-7 pitches. I think of Chris Bassitt. The comp I've been given was Chris Bassitt with more velocity. He can throw upper 90s fastball with good movement on it, 6-7 different pitches he can throw at you, and somebody the Blue Jays are very high on. So much like Alan Rodon made his Major League debut yesterday after being the International League Player of the Month in August here in Buffalo last year, that's one of my favorite parts of this job is we get to see all these young players, all this young talent here in Buffalo before they go to Toronto, and then to see their Major League debut. There's going to be a lot of those stories hopefully here this year.
All right, Pat Melicaro, 2:05 first pitch. He'll be on the call today against the Rochester Red Wings. Sal will be there. I'm planning to come, Pat, solo with a book is my plan. Taking the game.
Love
while
it.
Reading a little bit too. Reading Moneyball. So seems like the appropriate book, baseball book.
Great book.
All right, Pat, thanks for joining us today, and enjoy the season. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys.
Pat Melicaro, 1520 today, if you want to listen to the play-by-play of that game. When we come back, let's get into Diggs a little bit. We talked with him, with Ben Volin, about the role Diggs will have in New England. I want Sal's opinion on just the Patriots in general and the division, and I think they're kind of climbing to maybe being the biggest threat. I don't know how much of a threat that'll be right away, but good conversation about New England this offseason. That, when we come back, 803-0550 is the phone number. It's a Friday. We're heading into the weekend here on WGR.